Obviously, today could be a big day for Guardians as they can clinch a first-round bye and have home field advantage in the ALDS today with a win versus Cincinnati or a loss by the Astros versus Seattle. Now, mathematically, they still have a chance at the number one seed. It's just the odds are really long here because basically you probably need to go 5-0, and I think the Yankees need to go, because I got six games left, I think it's 2-4, something like that, for you to go ahead and take that. So that is where the Guardians sit tonight. I will also say I kind of hate that the Reds fired their manager before this series. Listen, the Reds aren't very good. And the Reds continue to be so the Pirates are the antithesis of the Guardians because the Pirates are a small market team undone by, just god-awful ownership that all they do is just kind of steal money and they never put it back into the program and they're not incentivized to be good or sell the team. That is a criticism that people have used about the Guardians, except under the Dolans, the Guardians have won a lot of baseball games. And I can't remember, I think it was from 2016. Since 2016, there's only like three teams in baseball that have a better winning percentage than the Guardians. And it's coincidentally all the teams you would think. It is big market teams like the Astros, Dodgers, and Yankees. But Cincinnati's not too far off that. Like I saw a Nick Kroll, who's the GM in Cincinnati, use the phrase, realities of a small market team. People are getting smarter. You have to update your BS. Like, I feel like we live in an era, especially in baseball, but I think in football this is the case as well, where because people are getting more hip to the tricks of these fat cats, right? These fatted calf billionaires who just continue to make money off civic properties and really putting nothing else back into the community, looking specifically at the Reds and Pirates ownerships. And so you can't use small market owners. You can't be like, we got to have the realities of small market ownership. That line is 20 years ago. You have to say a better thing. But I am bummed that they fired David Bell, mostly because, listen, they weren't going to make the playoffs. It's a lost season. They probably should fire David Bell. Like, it kind of takes the mickey out of this series. One, nobody gives a damn about the 71 Cup or whatever we call it. No, I mean, I'm sure that when we talk with Al Powell, I'm pretty sure he's going to talk about the importance of this, right? I don't know that any fan believes it. I don't believe it.
It's actually called the Ohio Cup.
Yeah, that too.
You're making it more complicated doing the road thing.
Yeah, but it's 71. I think 70, neither of it's good. I don't know why, like, the Ohio Cup is better. I butchered that. You got me, Keith. But the Ohio Cup doesn't do much for me. Honestly, you know why? Because it sounds too much like a college football trophy. Like the Barge or any of the other ones, which are great in college football because they've existed for 100 years. In baseball, it's like you've played the Reds since 1996, or 1997, excuse me. That being said, I do think the Guardians are in a really interesting situation. And this is not something I have a definitive answer for. This is more of a question than it is a definitive statement. There is a definitive statement, but then probably a question. The Guardians have gone 10-7 on their last 17 games. So that does not make them the hottest team in baseball. The Tigers, who have just continued to defy expectations, the Tigers, probably the hottest team in baseball. If you're not going to go to the Tigers, you probably have to go to the Mets. So at best, and I still don't think, by the way, because I think the Yankees have played a lot of really good baseball too, the Guardians are somewhere in the middle. They're definitely not one of the coldest teams. I think the Orioles are one of the coldest teams going into this whole thing. There's a few other others you can kind of point to. Certainly the Minnesota Twins and the Royals, or the Mins as I was about to call them, have had their shortcomings recently. But I think because the Guardians are in between, I just wonder, because we always, one of the cliches when you talk baseball is you just have to be hot at the right time. Which is, in and of itself, a little generic, right? Is because there have been teams that got really hot in August that have completely cooled off. Look at the Kansas City Royals since Pasquantino got hurt. That was a team that people in August were saying they're getting hot at the right time. Okay, but you have to sustain it. So if the Tigers are hot at the right time, that doesn't mean they're ready for the Astros in round one, right? If the Tigers get hot at the right time and run into another buzzsaw, all right, were they a product of their schedule, or were they, you know, did they just get the worst possible round one matchup? With the Guardians at 10-7, like, I don't know if they're hot enough. Like, 10-7 is really, really good for a September, considering what your August was. Does anybody think the Guardians are playing at their ceiling yet? Because I think this is where there's some wiggle room on where the Gardos are. Ideally, you'd be, I don't know, 14-3 in your last 17 games. You'd take the next five games and you'd, you know, in like September's past with Tito, you'd go storm into the playoffs and see where you go. But there is something to where the Guardians are that I like, where I still see better baseball ahead of them. I still think if Steven Kwan's back and you can push Martinez and Manzardo and Lane down the lineup, whether that's to the two hole or to the five and six hole, whichever one it is, Steven Kwan coming back 100%. And I believe today was the day that we initially expected to hear that Steven was going to come back. Have not heard hide nor hair of that, but just something to keep out on. Initially, this was the in the ether, the team never talks about this, but in the ether, Tuesday the 24th was supposed to be the day, that first time he could come back, and maybe the most logical time. So I think Kwan coming back gives you another dimension. I think Josh Naylor still has another 5 days to just, it's less about, I mean, listen, it's quite frankly, it is less swing and miss. It is less swinging for the light towers. But for Josh, I think some of that is who he is. I think it's a balance thing. But him hitting two home runs over the weekend in a single game, okay, there's another thing that gives you faith that, okay, yeah, they're hot, but maybe they're not as hot as they could be. Because I think the one thing that we, you know, we act as if there's this deadline for teams going into the playoffs that you have to play your absolute best baseball by the final regular season baseball game, and that automatically carries over into the playoffs. It doesn't always. And another thing that does happen is teams play pretty well, but maybe not their best baseball late in September, and then they flip the switch in October. And now usually a team still has as much youth on their team like the Guardians, I would say, and certainly with a rookie manager, I would say, well, I don't know the flip the switch conversation is right here because you're still so young. But remember, still a half your team was on this roster in 2022. So while you're not the Astros or Yankees, who have consistently been in the playoffs every year the last 5 to 7 years, the Astros having been in the ALCS for the last X amount of times, while you haven't been there, you do have enough playoff experience. And I also think you have enough wild cards. We'll get to that a little bit later about the guys who if they all of a sudden turn the lights on or gain a modicum of consistency or have a hot hand in October are going to make the big difference here. But it's interesting because I still think you have 5 games to find that perfect balance to continue to refine your approach. I still think as you go into October, there are going to be plenty of opportunities to get right, or not when I say get right, I mean to get to your absolute ceiling. But I think it's wild, like right now, if you told me your biggest concern was the Guardians' rotation in the postseason, that subsided some. But yeah, I mean, guys, it's Alex Cobb or Tanner Bibee versus Garrett Cole. It makes sense that you're going to go into that looking like that's a deficit. And the Yankees in general, I think, have a top five rotation in baseball this year. They're going to be a lot of series, potentially, that you go into. Even Baltimore, even though they've got a hogwash bullpen, it's a really good rotation. Corbin Burnes versus Tanner Bibee or Alex Cobb, it doesn't exactly exude confidence. I'm more confident about the rotation because I think Cobb and Bibee can hold down a spot and then you just try and figure out the third spot. But I can't sell you it's a strength. The lineup. I mean, I just made every which way case about the importance of Steven Kwan and Josh Naylor refining his thing. And by the way, you need guys who you're relying on right now to not disappear, like John Kensie Noel, like Angel Martinez, like Lane Thomas, who's a little bit older but not as playoff experienced. Like, it's another thing. And then there's the concern of, What if you're playing really, really well and the time off disjoints you? It's funny, guys. Stylistically, I think Steven Vogt is fit for the playoffs. Like, Tito's managerial style was, I'm going to let him play until I absolutely have to go deal with something. The thing I like about Vogt, and the thing that I think bodes well in the postseason, is the same thing that makes Bruce Bochy a pretty good regular season manager, but an elite postseason manager. Pushes the right buttons, and he's aggressive with it. He doesn't wait till you're about to lose the game to try and save the game. He just tries to win the game at every outcome. I think that's going to bode well. I think the toughest test for Steven Vogt that I can see isn't the rotation. It isn't the Guardians lineup. It's actually, if you should clinch tonight, the first round bye. It's going to be, how do you keep this team sharp and ascending in that time off between the wild card round and the ALDS? And here's the thing. It's not just on Steven Vogt. It's on every manager who gets a first-round bye. Just a reality. It's a catch-22. Like, you'd love to go right to the ALDS because those are, you know, what, three games left, five games left you have to play. But also, those games keep you sharp. And it's tough to stay sharp if you don't have baseball to play. So all of these things are things that could sink the Guardians, the rotation, the lineup, and the layoff. But I think the thing that, if I'm that organization, I'm trying to crack the code on before you get through these next five games, is how do we keep this team sharp in ascending and with an eye on the ball? Because one game, even if it's just game one, even if you're just rusty for one game, that can be the difference between advancing to the ALCS and not. The Guardians can clinch a first-round bye and home field advantage in the ALDS today with a win over Cincinnati or a loss by the Astros versus Seattle to talk all things Gardos. To get on the good vibes train, we head out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Welcome on Guardians Live on Bally Sports Great Lakes. Host, WKYC Channel 3 sports anchor, Al Pal. Al Pawlowski joins us now. Al Pal, welcome to the show, bud.
Hey, Nick. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. It's great to be ramping up for the playoffs here. Very, very excited. And you're excited as well. But, you know, obviously tonight they can clinch the 2 seed. They've got an outside chance to still make a run at the 1 seed. How much of a difference do you see between the 1 seed and the 2 seed for this Guardians team?
There's definitely a difference in this way. If you make it to the LCS, you get to have home field advantage there, which if they play the Yankees, which right now everything lined up, that's how it would go. However, with baseball playoffs, they almost never go as it's lined up, as we've learned in recent seasons. But I would much rather have 4 out of the 7 games here in Cleveland than 3 out of the 7, you know, here as the other side of the story. But if they get a top 2 seed, that's important because they do get the bye in the first round. They can set their pitching. They can rest their bullpen. I get the fact that you're going to go 4 or 5 days without playing a baseball game, but still, I think that's more important to have that rest and to set your rotation to get your pitching right than it is to play that round. And, I mean, it's only a best-of-3. Anything can happen in a best-of-3 series. So just getting the top 2 seed is the most important. If they can get the 1 seed, even better.
So I'm with you that I'll take having to figure out how to keep the team sharp over having to play in the wild card round 3 games.
Right.
Well, especially if it was a 5-game series, I actually might feel differently, but it's a 3-game set. That's one bad game and you're out there. So I'm curious though, what do you see as the bigger speed bump in that ALDS? Especially early on? Rust, so the layoff factor, lineup or the rotation?
I think it's going to be sorting out the starting rotation because, you know, you've got Tanner Bibee who's been consistent all season long. But unfortunately, he's been the only one that's been consistent all season long outside of Ben Lively. But are you going to start Ben in one of these games? You could, on one hand, you can make an argument he's earned it. On another hand, you can say, well, you know, he might be better off if the other team just sees him once or twice through the order. Gavin Williams has only played half a season. He looked better his last time out. Joey Cantillo has been fabulous in September, but it's only been September. That's where I think they're going to have to figure it out. Matthew Boyd's been very good, too, but his last 2 outings, he's only gone a combined 6 2/3 innings. So what is that rotation going to look like? You most likely are giving the ball to Tanner Bibee to start the first game. He's earned it. He's been their ace all season long. But then who starts game two? Who starts game three? Do you do a piggyback scenario where perhaps you start Lively and piggyback Cantillo or vice versa there? All those things have to be sorted out. One more thing to add to the mix, Alex Cobb. Is he going to be healthy enough to pitch? And with the experience he's got and a little bit we've seen of him this year when he was perfect for six innings against Pittsburgh, he's demonstrated he could be a guy that can win for you in October. So that, to me, Nick, are where the most questions lie.
Al, I'm glad you gave a segment there on Alex Cobb. Should we expect him to be ready for a first-round playoff series? Like, what's the latest there?
It sounds like he's going to be. Unfortunately, those blisters can be finicky on your finger. You know, he had the nail issue. From what I understand, that pretty much at the moment has healed itself. But now he's got that blister that rubs on the seam when on the inside of his finger. That can be tricky. As minor as it seems for a pitcher that, you know, spins the ball a lot, most of these guys in the majors are all spinning the ball quite a bit. You got to have that. So I think so. It sounds like he's going to be ready, but that's far from a guarantee.
Al Pawlowski of Bally Sports on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline as we get you ready for Gardo's Reds later tonight. So I noted it's tough to figure out Gavin Williams' relationship to this rotation and his role in the postseason, because you can make an argument of starters, he's got the best stuff, but clearly he's just not where he needs to be. And really, I think we've seen kind of that push and pull of him being really good and then something you can't have, which is a little disastrous in the playoffs. If Gavin isn't in the rotation, could you see him being floated like almost like a multi-inning option or even tested in like a high leverage role?
Yeah, I think he's on the staff no matter what. His stuff is just too good. If you're not going to start him, yeah, a multi-inning role, maybe coming in for a starter that doesn't do so well, I think that's what you would look at for him. Or, you know, for just this October, he would be a pretty devastating, you know, seventh or eighth inning guy setting up for Emmanuel Clase, although you've got Gattis and Cade Smith who have been devastating in their own right. But maybe you lengthen that. Maybe now you look at, okay, well, what if we brought Gavin Williams in the fifth inning and he pitched the fifth and sixth? Cade Smith pitches the seventh. Gattis pitches the eighth. Clase pitches the ninth. I mean, man, that would be pretty tough for any team. I don't care who they are, Yankees, Dodgers, whomever it would be. That would be a rough group to face if you're the opposing lineup. But with Gavin Williams, I mean, you're right, Nick. He's got such good stuff. I mean, we've seen some incredible outings from him in his two-year career. I mean, go back to last August when he struck out 12 Toronto Blue Jays here in Cleveland. I mean, it looked like he was turning the corner to maybe becoming an ace right then and there. And then this past season, he had a good start his last time out there on Sunday. He deserved some run support. He didn't get it. Gave up one run, but that was simply because a fly ball wasn't caught in right field. He went six basically shutout innings. And then go back to Labor Day against Kansas City when the Royals were still trying to catch Cleveland. I mean, he went out in game one of that series on that Monday afternoon in Kansas City, and he just shut down the Royals and set the tone for that series. So he's got some big outings that you would love to see in October. But the problem had consistency. If you're going to go a glass half full on him, though, I mean, look at his run support. He hasn't gotten a lot this year. So if he would have gotten the run support of, say, a Logan Allen, who for whatever reason got a ton this year, would his record be a lot different? I think it would.
So with that, I know he, you know, his season was disrupted because of the injury. And with young guys, pitchers are such, especially starters, such creatures of habit. But, you know, in big picture, is he tipping his pitches conversation that happened for a minute? Is there like a singular theory on why Gavin hasn't hit his stride consistently this year, or is it just kind of a free for all, a buffet of a lot of things go into it?
I think it's what the latter there. I think a lot of things go into it. You know, number one, he is still a young pitcher who is relatively inexperienced. Like you mentioned, he missed the first half of the season when he was injured, so he's really only been pitching for what, 2.5 months this year, 3 months. He had a good spring training until the very end when he went out. He had a good year last year, his first, not full season at the big league level, but his first taste of big league action, extended action. He's got the stuff, that's for sure. The problems that we've seen are command. So on days he has it, he's nearly unhittable, and we've seen some of those games. But on the days he doesn't have it, it's like, you know, about 75% of those games, and I'm just throwing a number out there, but it seems like he can't then find it. Occasionally he does. But when he doesn't have command, two things happen. He's either missing right down the middle of the plate with his stuff, and you can't do that here because you'll get killed immediately. Or he's not throwing strikes. Now, more so, it's not commanding the pitches and missing within the zone. And that's where you really get hurt up here at the big league level. Why that's happening, it could be a little bit of a lack of experience. It could be because he missed the first half of the season. You know, he just never really has found that consistent groove for any length of time. But I'll tell you, Nick, when he finds it, man, he's a pretty special pitcher.
Al, do you consider this season the most surprising Guardian season or Cleveland baseball history that you can remember, including over 2022, or is that still the bar for surprising?
I think, you know, in some ways it's a little bit more surprising than 2022 because, you know, you still had Tito, who was here for a long time, who established that winning culture. That was definitely a surprise, though. You had a lot of young kids. Nobody picked them to do anything. And you had a number of guys that had career years and a number of young kids that came out of nowhere.
Al Pulaski on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Sorry, buddy.
Okay. So add in the fact that you've got in his first year as manager and right up where Tito left off. I mean, he's replacing a Hall of Fame manager in Terry Francona. That's not easy to do. On top of that, nobody thought this team was going to win 80 games, let alone win the division. If you look back at most people's prognostications back in February and March, it's like, well, this team will probably win 75 games. Most. That's what most people said. I thought it would be between the Guardians and the Twins. Well, I was half right. It was between the Guardians and the Royals for the most part. Twins were in it for a little bit. I thought, you know, 85 to 90 wins would get it done in the American League Central. Cleveland's going to have just over 90. But the fact that they've been so far above 500, been in first place since April 13th, we're out of first place for, I think, a day, maybe two, this entire season. That was back in April. That, to me, is probably the biggest surprise. The only other thing, if you want to go way back, and they didn't make the playoffs this year, that 1986 team, Nick, down May, they were coming off a 100-plus loss season in 85. Nobody gave them any chance at all, and that was the incredible offensive team from the 80s. So they didn't make the postseason, but that 86 team came out of nowhere. The 2022 team pretty much came out of nowhere, and I think this year, because of Stephen Vogt's first year as manager, nobody knew that he would be as good as he is and these young players would do as well as they've done. Very similar on a player level to 2022.
Al, there are a few generalities that baseball fans, casual and hardcores, use about the playoffs, including you just make the playoffs, you can win the World Series. And the other one is it's all about who gets hot at the right time. Well, in the American League, there's very few teams. I mean, it's the Royals and Twins who are falling out of this thing that are cold at the wrong time. The Orioles have had their cold streak, but the Guardians, the Yankees, obviously the Tigers, the Astros have fared well here in the month of September. But the Guardians are 10-7 in their last 17 games. Is that hot enough to have that hot streak that I think everybody's talking about?
I think it is. I think it can be, let's say. You know, what's going to happen in October, you're right. I think a lot of the cliches are true with Major League Baseball, especially now since you have the expanded playoffs and you have even the shorter series.
Let's go ahead and pop him on hold real quick there just to see if we can get Al Powell back. I felt bad because I didn't realize his phone had dropped the first time, so then I'm trying not to jam our guy up right now. But I'm fascinated by this answer because it's something we're going to bring back later in the show when Spencer joins us, because I think we continue to get back and cycle back to the idea of, hottest team. It's not always about the hottest team, right? Some teams play incredibly well through September and then lay a big fat egg in that first round series or in the wild card round series, which obviously the Guardians are hoping to sidestep this year. So it could be, I think that's how most teams feel. So I think every generality, there's a big kernel of truth in there, but it is specific to each team. I'll be honest with you guys, like, I think the Yankees need the one seed more than the Guardians do because they have a mental bugaboo with the Astros. They can't do it. It's their blind spot. And if the Astros get the Yankees in the ALDS, if they survive that far, I don't know that the Yankees are going to the World Series. I don't know the Yankees are going to the ALCS. Now, you and I have memory glitches and not great memories of the Astros from the end of those Lindor teams. What is it, 2017, 2018? I think it's 2018. But that being said, like that, this locker room doesn't, because really nobody was here outside of Hosey when you were playing that team. It's not even your manager is there. I think for the Yankees, it does matter. But I think the bigger picture here is when we get to something like 10-70 in the last 17 games, it could be enough. But you have to continue that heat, that hot play, even whether you're the hottest team or the fourth hottest team heading into October, and that is unquantifiable. Like, you can say, well, the Yankees are hot and they've got a good lineup. They've got a great rotation, a great bullpen. And with the Guardians, it's, well, the rotation's giving you enough. The lineup's giving you enough. An elite bullpen and a great young manager. All right, but that's where October becomes the proving ground. I understand. We don't all get in the car for the beginning of this segment, and then, you know, you don't leave at the end of every segment. Because I've had a few people, and it's apparent. Like, the people I upset earlier today with the start of the show, which is, it is easy for the Cleveland Browns. It would be easy to just say, cut Deshaun, fire Deshaun, banish Deshaun out of the NFL, because then we can still feel good about the Cleveland Browns. If we look at why Deshaun hasn't worked out in Brown and Orange at this point, it's easier to look at Deshaun and say, it's that guy. I didn't know him when they traded for him. I didn't like the trade. I didn't like the allegations. I didn't like the rust. I loved Baker. I'm a Joe Flacco guy. He hasn't done anything to ingratiate himself to Cleveland at large. All these kind of things. And by the way, there's a lot of fairness in there. But if that's how the Browns are looking at it, they will fail whatever their next quarterback setup is. In the same way that this same organization failed with Baker. Was Baker a first-class pain in the ass? You bet your sweet bippy he was. Was Baker not the perfect moldable quarterback like Tom Brady, who Tom said the right things, and he looked like a quarterback, and he acted like a quarterback, and he led like a... He was a leader of men. Okay, Baker led differently. Baker spoke and communicated, and at some point warred with the media. But what were the Browns' role in Baker's outgoing thing? Because here's the thing, guys. It's like any relationship. If you only focus on the other side of the street, right? Whether you're married, whether it's a friendship, whether it's a situationship, I think that's a thing. I don't know. I'm old now. Whatever it is, if all you ever do is look at the other side of the street and said, well, that's why I'm not in it, I'm going to tell you. You're going to repeat your failures again and again. Now, and by the way, sometimes it is mostly the other side. So I'm here for the whole ratio. Well, it's 20% Deshaun and it's 80% the Browns or vice versa. Totally here for that. Totally understand that. But this idea that it's 100% on Deshaun Watson is just not true. That's not how sports work. It's not how life works. Deshaun didn't trade for himself. Deshaun, after being excluded from and ruled out to come here, Deshaun didn't go and say, didn't pay himself $230 million guaranteed. Deshaun hasn't been stubborn about the offensive system. Deshaun hasn't been bad at drafting or subpar at drafting, I think is a better way to put it. You cannot absolve, and here's the thing, if you are the Browns, you cannot absolve yourself. If you want to be Baltimore and Pittsburgh, you have to be honest. You have to be frank with yourself. So even if you get the get-out-of-jail-free card, that is the NFL allowing you to void this contract, if the off-the-field situation gets worse, guys, like, the Browns need to own the Brown side of the street. And Mitchell, who seems like a very decent fellow here, saying he turned on the show to see what nonsense was being spewed, and there always is some nonsense. It is me, for after all. but saying the Browns have failed Deshaun Watson was an actual quote. Actually, you took half the quote there, Mitchie. I don't know you enough to go Mitchie, but I'm still gonna do this. The Browns have failed Deshaun Watson, and Deshaun Watson has failed the Cleveland Browns. That's not up for debate. The question is, what's the ratio? Mitchell also accusing me then of being on either Deshaun or the Browns' payroll. And may I say, if I am getting paid to not come out here and wallop Deshaun, can someone tell my bank account? Somebody. Because last time I checked, I've heard this thing of like, dirty cops getting paid off. And they drive Maseratis on a cop salary. Still got my pickup. I've had it for a while now. Rent a house. Gonna buy one. Ooh, that'd be great. You know what? If the Browns and Deshaun would like to buy me a house, I'll say even nicer things about them. Just because somebody doesn't go ahead and just randomly bash a guy because you don't like him doesn't mean they're on the payroll. It's called individual thought, Mitchell. It's okay, buddy. 216-474-0092. I put the ratio at 50-50. I really do. And I think, and maybe I'm skewing it a little bit more 50-50 because I don't think anybody in this town outside of myself, I think I've heard JP do it occasionally. I think each one of the shows has done it periodically, but not consistently. I don't think anyone's addressed the Brown side of this. I don't want to go through the Baker thing again, guys. I sure as hell, if there's no way out of this that isn't moving on from Deshaun, I sure as hell don't want to do this again. Right? I want to win. I want to be the Ravens. I want to be the Steelers. I want the omnipresent culture that leads to Super Bowls. Not Super Bowl. Not losing in the Super Bowl, but Super Bowls. And you cannot do that unless you figure out, and by the way, some of this is trying to make it work with Deshaun. Some of this is everybody laying down their defenses and leading their way out of this. That if you just put it on Deshaun, all you're doing is scapegoating. It's the same thing you did with Joe Woods. It's the same thing you did with AVP. It's the same thing you did with Baker. There might be a lot of truth in those guys being part of what was holding you back previously. But if it's just always somebody else, it's always somebody else's side of the street, you're gonna be where you are now, which is you might make the playoffs. You might be, at worst, a 7 or 8 win team. But you sure as hell aren't winning titles like this. Not as currently constructed. Elton, welcome to the show, buddy. What you got for us?
Afternoon, Nick. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Stefanski has a lot of the blame at his feet. Let's just look at the last 4 years. Those two coaches of the years are definitely fool goals. He had good coordinators, and the defense made some plays. Now, if we go back to when he first came to make the playoffs, we won that playoff game. AVP and a bunch of other guys were sharing the coaching duty. The following year, Baker gets hurt. All of a sudden now, everybody knew he was hurt. Regardless of what they said, they could have easily sat him. But instead of him running Chubb, we're going to keep throwing and messing up even more now. Okay, cool. They never won at Baker. Now we get to shine. What does he do? Hey, this is my offense. Like you said, this is my offense. You run this offense. I don't care what you do good. But if you look at the first 3 games, for every one good game he calls 12 bad ones. He made no adjustments in the Dallas game. He made no adjustments on Sunday. If a team is blitzing, common sense tells you, hey, let me do 2-step drops. Let me do 3-step drops. Let me run counters. Let me run traps. Let me run screens to slow them down. But he did not do that. It's, I don't know what to do. So now, this morning, you heard Lima and them saying that, oh, could it be Dorsey? It's not Dorsey, because Dorsey's not calling the plays. It's Stefanski. It's Kevin. Oh, it's a mesh offense. Why are we hiring an offensive coordinator then? If he can't call the plays and install his offense, why do we have him? It's pointless. When Barry gets fired, Stefanski is going with him. I understand Kevin knows that his lease is short and he's not going to have a long time, so he's trying to get as much out as he can. But he is a major, major problem. It's been going on for 4 years, and you have so far been the only one to seem to recognize that problem. So I give you kudos for that. Thank you.
Elton, we appreciate you, buddy. So there's a few things. So even if it is Dorsey, who hired Dorsey? It's not like Kevin was told to hire one specific guy. Kevin interviewed Clint Kubiak, who's doing quite well in New Orleans. And I think Kevin's desire to remain as the play caller, I'm going to go ahead and say that was part of why certain guys maybe didn't get hired. Again, that is I don't know that for certain. That is more of a guess than it is a I know that, so I want to make sure to give Kevin that deference. The adjustment thing is, I do think they made adjustments. They didn't work. So that's not great. And the other thing is, listen, I think the drops, meaning like how many step drops, I think some of that is on Stefanski's ability to get through Deshaun. But I think some of that is on Deshaun. Quite frankly, Deshaun, if your offensive line is getting beat up the middle and off the sides, your choice is, do I do a shorter step drop and maybe get sacked quicker or drop back farther and see if I can outrun the edge pressure? Doesn't mean Deshaun is right to do that, but I do think the dropping back too far is on Deshaun.